Welcome to the College Football Bros, episode number 69. And now, here are your hosts, Michael, Ryan, and Trey Newman.
Welcome to the College Football Bros podcast. I am Michael Newman, and I'm joined by the brother who wanted Georgia for that fourth spot.
Yeah, that would be me, Ryan Newman.
And by the other brother, who also wanted Georgia.
I did, yep. That was Trey Newman.
All right, we'll get to that in a minute. But first, we got to talk about the College Football Pick'em League. It's now over, of course, but there's some drama. Stone Cold Drew Locks came in first place and, of course, therefore has the right to the highly coveted prizes, which are the personalized voicemail from Beth Moens, a digital Fourth Bro Award, and a College Football Bros t-shirt. But we received an email literally like a half hour before recording this from Stone Cold Drew Locks, and here's what it says. And the subject is Stone Cold Asterisk, which I think should be the title of the 30 for 30 that will be made about this.
Yeah, this is quite a story.
So he says, "Bros, love the podcast." He didn't actually say that, but he would say that if he thought about it.
No doubt.
He actually did say that, so just for the record.
Oh.
Had a blast competing in your Yahoo Pick'em, but there is no way I would feel right winning anything considering how Rick Saban was torching the field all season. I'd like to respectfully decline the prizes. I would take much greater pleasure in knowing that Rick Saban is now the honorary fourth bro. Let's show the man some grace for missing a week. Let's make this happen. Tom from Columbia, Missouri.
Wow.
Wow.
Whoa. Mind blown.
Whoa. What do we
classy,
do, guys?
Classy gesture.
It was a classy gesture.
Class act. He's a class act.
Yeah.
He really is.
Giving up such, you know, great prizes. I mean, wow, that's...
Oh. Do you think he just was like, thanks, but no thanks? I really don't want those prizes?
It's like, yeah, please don't send those to me.
I didn't think of it that way. So what do we do?
I mean, we got to respect his wishes. He is the winner, so he kind of should get to decide, right?
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fair.
Rick Saban, he was going to kill everybody, so.
Yeah, we should have given him a little mulligan for that missing 1 week.
Yeah.
So, okay.
If it was two weeks.
It was a tough week, though. He could have gone like over.
He would have needed to go 2-23 for him not to have won. Yeah. So let's give it to Rick Saban. So, Rick, send us an email to collegefootballbros@gmail.com and let us know your t-shirt size and an address for us to rob. I mean, for us to send the t-shirt.
Yeah. Excuse. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Should I edit that?
Please.
No. Okay. The bros, how about us? We all had winning records.
Yeah. Bravo. Bravo. We'll take it.
Trey, you came in first, though, by 3 games.
That's right.
Well done. Ryan, you and I tied, so I think we got to do a tiebreaker to determine who came in last among the bros, who came in third.
I like to look at it as who came in second, but that's just me.
Okay. Well,
you know.
Tony Romo, Army Navy points scored. What do you think, Ryan?
Yep. All right. Well, let's see. I did not look at the forecast for the weather. Is this game in Philly again? Or
believe it is.
Where is it in Philly? All right. Well, the weather usually plays a big factor, but I'm gonna go. They don't score much in that one. I'm gonna say 39.
Okay, 38.9.
You SOB.
No, I'll go 37. I think that's more fair.
Well, it's going to be a 24-14 ball game now.
Yeah, that would be a problem. We'd figure something else out. Hey, how about Greco-Roman wrestling?
No, thanks.
Okay. Well, think about it.
Don't say no.
In fact, I'm not going to accept an answer. Sleep on it.
What about a lemon essence, the oil?
It's a lemon essence, and it is delightful. That is a deep cut. I'm not sure if anyone knows that reference.
Yeah.
They'd be email impressive. Us, and yeah. I'm not sure what we'll give them.
Just props, I guess.
Some props. There you go. Okay. Let's get to probably what everyone wants to hear about, the playoff rankings. Hold up, past Michael. It is Michael from the future, and I'm going to let you finish, but for now, we have to interrupt this podcast for some breaking news. We had already recorded the entire episode, and of course, some breaking news this morning. Urban Meyer has announced his retirement, effective after the Rose Bowl. Ryan Day will take over as head coach. He just received a 5-year contract. We'll talk about our thoughts on that promotion in a minute, but first off, guys, what is your reaction to this news?
Yeah, well, my initial reaction is I'm not that surprised. Based off of his health, you know, they already had reports of the cyst in his brain and he had some major headaches. So that was kind of the telltale sign that maybe his time was coming to a close. And then obviously what happened during the offseason and being suspended for 3 games, that was weighed on him for sure as well. So, I mean, they had a great year when he came back. They were 11-1 and for 12-1. And so maybe you thought, if I had to guess, I would have said, okay, he's going to come back. But still not shocked that he had decided to leave.
No, I'm not shocked. It was a pretty tumultuous year for him, and he kind of has a track record of doing, you know, similar things. Obviously he left Florida, with some quote unquote health issues and then obviously the whole
shots fired there.
What? It's a fact.
Well, you said quote unquote. I mean, it made it sound like he didn't really have health
issues. Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, that heart issue that he had.
But either way, the one thing I do want to say, though, about the program is Ohio State might look a little bit worse right now, considering, you know, they had a chance to kind of make a statement and fire him or terminate him. And as it turns out, you know, they suspend him for 3 games, but, you know, 9 games later, he ends up bailing on him. So it was... They could have handled it a little better and made themselves look better. Instead, they got a bunch of scrutiny. But as far as the other side, I don't necessarily think he's done. I think he, know, he's fairly young, and give him a couple years to rejuvenate, refresh. The fire will burn, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him land somewhere else down the road.
Yeah, I do believe him. I think that press conference, from the bits and pieces I saw, I think he was being honest. He did, of course, say, I think the health issues were the top reason that he's stepping down. And I definitely believe that's true. Yeah. But he was honest that the events this summer, of course, played a factor as well.
Yeah, they had to.
Yeah. So I believe him when he says he doesn't plan to coach. But I agree. If I had to guess, I think someday he will come back. It would have to be for, obviously, you know, maybe a Notre Dame or...
USC.
Yeah, USC. It would have to be a very good job, but I think that's a few years at least in the future.
Yeah, I mean, he's 54, so what, we got some coaches quite a bit older than that coming back, like Mac Brown. So, but yeah,
Les Miles.
I like Trey's point, though, about how Ohio State really could have maybe saved face a little bit better a couple months ago. I mean, is it really worth all the headaches that they, well, no pun intended really with the headaches, but oof. Yeah. Is it worth all of the problems and the issues that they had and the scrutiny that they got just to have Urban Meyer for what, 9 games or 10 games?
Yeah.
If he was just going to retire anyway. So, I mean, they could have looked a lot better if they totally got rid of him. So I don't know.
Yeah. It's an interesting point. Okay, well, and also, how about Urban Meyer's legacy? They asked him, will this be a part of your legacy? Will the Zach Smith situation? And he was honest about that, too. He said, yeah. And he said it bothered him, which, understandably, but...
yeah.
How do you think he'll be remembered?
I mean,
he's
exactly
not dead.
The way he
he's not
it.
Dead, so...
No, he's not
he's
dead,
still
but
alive.
There's always going to be a little bit of an asterisk on his coaching career. I mean, he had a great career. I mean,
he's one of the best coaches ever.
He is. I mean, I saw a stat today. He was the third most winningest coach of all time that's coached for at least 10 years. The other two were Newt Rockne and Frank Leahy. And, you know, those guys were way, way, way a long time ago. So if we're talking modern college football, he's the best.
Okay. Well, what do you guys think about the promotion of Ryan Day? Does that make sense to you?
You know, I was a little surprised by it just because, you know, a program like Ohio State... I wasn't necessarily, you know, Ryan Day to me kind of seemed like more of a hire that you would do if it was in the interim, kind of like they did earlier in the season. They made him the interim coach, but, you know, all the reports are saying that he and the program loves him. So, I mean, I'm sure he's legit. I was just surprised he's getting a 5-year deal. And, you know, Ohio State, it recruits itself, so that part I'm not too concerned about. They're going to be fine in that regard. But I'm really interested, though, to see how it goes just coming down from a high like Urban Meyer.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you that I'm a little surprised just based off of his coaching career. It hasn't really, he hasn't been a head coach before, so it's a little light on experience. I'm not surprised that he got a 5-year deal. I mean, that's kind of the minimum. If you're going to be hire a head coach, you can't hire less than that because you need to, recruits are going to need to see at least 5 years. But it is a little surprising. I mean, it's just the fact that he hasn't had a ton of experience, although he appears to be, or I guess he was, the most qualified candidate on the staff. So, you know, and times are good right now for Ohio State, so you don't really want to go hire somebody from the outside, or need to, really. So it's like, hey, let's keep this thing going. Who's the best guy that can take over for Urban? And that guy was Ryan Day.
Yeah, I agree. I'm usually not a fan of just promoting from within, especially at a place like Ohio State, because you can go out and get so many great coaches, of course. But this is a lot different than the situation at USC with Clay Helton, because Clay Helton was a guy, not a lot of schools would have wanted him as their head coach. But Ryan Day is very respected around the country. Last year, I think I read that Mississippi State, I think, had offered him that job, or at least they wanted to interview him.
Really?
So,
okay, yeah,
other schools wanted him. So it would have been a reasonable hire, even if he wasn't at Ohio State. So I'm definitely okay with it. I think it's the right move. Keep the recruiting class intact, and
yeah,
like you said, Ryan, just keep it rolling.
And he's, you know, he's also under the Chip Kelly coaching tree. He played for him at New Hampshire, and he coached under him a couple years. And he was, you know, he had a couple good years as offensive coordinator at BC, like the Andre Williams, I think, year he was there. So he's got some good experience as far as under great coaches. So it's got that going for him.
Okay. Well, we actually had some more breaking news. So many things happened after we finished our podcast. According to Bruce Feldman, Cliff Kingsbury has agreed to become the offensive coordinator for USC.
Wow. I'm sure you are super excited about that one.
I am very pumped. Uh-huh. It was looking like a dark off season for USC fans, but something to look forward to.
Yeah. I'm sure you're hoping he takes over the head coaching job in the near future as interim coach and then permanently.
I'm not willing to go that far. Not willing to go that
well,
far yet.
You're hoping.
I'm hoping he could definitely. I want him to be the face of the program. That's for sure.
You no doubt about that.
Do you want him to coach with his shirt off on the sideline?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Trey, because a lot of people just kind of give credit to Cliff Kingsbury. You know, the face, you know, the jawline, the scruff, those piercing blue eyes. But I think there's some short shrift given to his body,
his physique.
Yeah. Body of work. I'm sorry. His body of work.
Oh, you're
I'm
right.
talking about his
coaching
resume.
Oh, yeah. Career, yeah. You mean the way he develops receivers and quarterbacks?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Right. Naturally.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other news. Kelly Bryant is transferring to Mizzou.
Meh.
I mean, we've got all offseason to talk about these things, so maybe we should just
call it a
get
day.
Back to the podcast. Should we let the past bros keep talking?
It's about time.
All right. Let's throw it back. Michael. You're doing a great job. Keep up the good work and continue. Number 1, Alabama. Number 2, Clemson. Number 3, Notre Dame. Of course, those were kind of knew that was going to happen. But number 4 is Oklahoma. And we, of course, all thought that Georgia should be number 4. So, Trey, why did you think that?
So, first of all, I can't wait to see what Oklahoma's offense can do up against this Bama defense. And I'm not saying that OU isn't deserving, but after watching Georgia play down the stretch of the season, and particularly in this Alabama game, it's really hard for me to say that Georgia isn't a top 4 team. Now, I really do see both sides of the argument. You know, one side you say, okay, they have 2 losses, and this SEC championship was their playoff game, and people don't want to see a rematch next. But say Georgia had won. They'd both be in the playoff anyway, and no one would have a gripe or complaint about a potential rematch there.
Yeah, and that's not the committee's job, is to worry about rematches or whether this was a playoff game. They look at the whole entire season, look at the resume, and decide the four, you know, most deserving teams.
Yeah, but probably my biggest point on this and the other aspect is, why punish a team and why punish them for their plus one or conference championship game where they lose barely to one of the most dominant number one teams in our era? And it wasn't a gimmick or fluke that they were in the game. There weren't any crazy like injuries or trick plays. It just, they were winning man for man, and they just happened to be a little short.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it well. They're getting punished for having to play against the best team in the country, because if they had played, let's just say, Pitt,
right,
and played the exact same way, then, or let's say that they played worse, they won 3-0, which is clearly a worse performance. But at that point, we'd say they definitely, or people would say they definitely deserve to be in, right?
Yeah.
But instead, of course, yeah, they play one of the best teams of our lifetime and almost beat them. And so I'm going to look at that as a great performance. I, of course, losses count, but we can also provide context to that and decide who they're playing against. So I think what Georgia did is more impressive than being tied in the fourth quarter against Texas and winning by 12. And Georgia was ahead of them before the week. Everyone agreed on that. We already knew that Georgia had lost by 20 to LSU, and we still had them ahead of Oklahoma.
Right.
So I didn't see anything that would make me change my mind about that.
Yeah, you guys said a lot of the things that I was thinking there, but Michael, especially you, when you were saying, I mean, a 7-point loss to Alabama and the way they did it is definitely more impressive than a 12-point win to Texas to me. And so they are absolutely getting punished for having to play one of the best teams ever. And it just, if you look at the rest of their season though, that other than the LSU game, they won every other single game by at least two touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, OU was struggling with, you know, quite a few squads throughout the year. So Georgia was, if you just look pound for pound, game by game, I don't know how you can look at them and not say that they're a better team overall than OU.
And to give some specifics to your talk about Oklahoma struggling, they had to go to overtime to beat Army at home. They almost lost to Texas Tech, who had a losing record. They almost lost at home to Oklahoma State, who went 6-6. They let Kansas hang around for three quarters.
West Virginia, they barely won.
Yeah, which is a tough game, but still.
It's a tough game, but still.
You put all of those games kind of together, because LSU's bad part of their resume kind of all came in one game. It just all came in that LSU game. That's the only blip. They lost by 20 on the road against a tough team, but still, it's obviously not good. But Oklahoma had several games that maybe weren't quite as bad as that, though you could argue
maybe some of
them were.
Army in overtime, yeah.
Right, but when you combine all of Oklahoma's negatives, I think that outweighs Georgia's negatives.
Yeah. Yeah, 100% agree.
But I think all of us, I mean, Trey, you brought it up, I think this argument was relatively close, even though I made that impassioned argument. I have not much of a problem with Oklahoma going. I think it's a reasonable choice.
Yep. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the committee so far, since we've had a committee, I felt like they've done a good job. You know, they do a good job looking at analytics and the eye test, but combine that also with kind of just deserving. While I disagree with them on this one, it's not like a huge craziness, but.
Right. I actually think our friend Braden Hodges said it best on Twitter. He said, "The real number four team is all the friends we made along the way."
Oh, that's it's classic.
I love that. That is one of the funniest tweets I've ever read. didn't get the love that it deserved. Sorry, Braden.
Not many retweets?
No, I don't know if it had any I forgot to retweet. I should have retweeted it, but I didn't do my part. Too late now, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's getting run on the pod now.
Yeah, exactly. That's worth a million retweets.
That's right.
Question on Instagram from ADJKEFHJ.
What?
Ajkovich.
Must be Russian, right?
Probably. Yeah. Ohio State and Notre Dame have two common opponents, Michigan and Northwestern. To me, I think Ohio State easily looked better than Notre Dame against both. Do you think Notre Dame would be favored over Ohio State if they played now? And he also sent us a tweet questioning whether Notre Dame should even be in the playoff given what he calls their weak schedule. So what do you think about that, Trey?
So first of all, I agree that Ohio State looked better in those two games. Maybe not easily, but I think they looked better. But unfortunately for Ohio State, they just had so many other games where they looked less than stellar. As far as these two matching up, I think Ohio State would be favored over the Irish, and I would probably pick Ohio State if they did actually square off. But along this topic, Peter Burns of ESPN and the SEC Network, he tweeted something out today that really made me think, and it's fascinating. Here's the tweet. If BYU played the exact schedule with the same exact results as Notre Dame, there is zero way that would have been considered a top four team. Now, his case is that Notre Dame's brand is the reason they're in. I'm not saying I entirely agree. And I
totally disagree with that. There's zero way. I mean,
that's what
I'm sure Notre Dame gets some boost, just like any big Power Five school gets some boost from, I guess, their brand. But I think BYU would have been in with that resume as well.
Yeah, a win over Michigan, Syracuse.
I don't agree that they'd have zero chance, but I do agree that it might not be a shoe-in. Let's put it that way.
I think it would be a shoe-in, but that's just me.
Yeah, like you said, Ryan, I mean, not only beating Syracuse and Stanford, dominating them, the Michigan win.
Yeah.
The Michigan win is...
So, guys, now, I understand the committee, but wouldn't you say Georgia's better than Notre Dame?
Probably, yeah.
I definitely think they are, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it reminds me of something I wanted to say. So there's a lot of talk about, of course, the language they use is the four best teams, and that's what the committee uses, and it sounds good, but they're not trying to find the four best teams.
Within reason, kind of. It's like...
Yeah, it's a mixture of best and most deserving, because if all they cared about was finding the four best teams, then let's go to that Oklahoma-Oklahoma State game where Oklahoma State's going for two. Let's say it wasn't quite the end of the game, but let's say it was. They're going for two to win, and Taylor Cornelius had a guy open. If Taylor Cornelius makes that pass or doesn't make that pass, that has very little to do with how good Oklahoma is, right? Like, it's one play. It has almost nothing to do with how good they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, if he did make that pass and they win, then the committee wouldn't even be considering Oklahoma for that fourth spot. So,
that's
what we want, right? We want that loss to count somewhat. So, that's all I have to say.
I mean, I want losses to count, but I also want to be like realistic. Say, who are the best teams? I mean, I don't want to fumble here late in one game or a 2-point conversion that wasn't made to cost a team a chance at a national title when they're deserving of a top four team.
I think that I'm okay with it costing a team. I just don't want us to totally ignore that context.
Fair enough.
I do think wins and losses should count, obviously. I just think even with that loss, Georgia deserved to be in.
Agreed.
Fair enough. But as far as getting back to the original question, is the Ohio State, Notre Dame, who would be favored? I agree with Trey. I think Ohio State would be favored by a little bit, and I would probably pick them to win that game. But to say that Notre Dame doesn't deserve to be in the playoff, I would disagree with that.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that. It was an interesting tweet I read.
Right, and their resume, by the way, their strength of schedule is 42nd, according to Sagarin. Ohio State's is 40th, so they're about the same schedule.
And Ohio State's not in the playoff.
No, and Ohio State, well, they got blown out one game. So
I know. I'm not saying Ohio State deserves to be in.
Okay, let's recap championship week, and we will start with the Pac-12 championship. Washington beat Utah 10-3 in front of a packed house in Santa Clara. That was
An
incredible atmosphere.
Ryan, what environment.
What were you able to hear the announcers through all the noise, or I don't know?
It was rough, man. I mean, maybe they should go to a home field for the Pac-12 title game so they can get some fans.
Might be a good
there.
Idea.
Yeah. Wow, this was rough.
Vegas.
Well, you can't go wrong with Vegas, yeah. But if you wanted to know why the Pac-12 was left out of the playoff Yeah, I mean, this was case in point here. Neither team could do anything offensively. And I mean, while each team has good defenses, they're not that incredible. And UW, they got pretty lucky on that last play, that fourth down play where Utah, the receiver was clearly interfered with by Byron Murphy. But I mean, even if the penalty was called, Utah still would have had to go about 25 yards in less than 30 seconds, which I don't know what the percentage of them scoring a touchdown, but I would give it less than a quarter, less than 25%.
Yeah, I mean, given what they had looked like the entire game, I don't have a lot of confidence in that.
Yeah, it wasn't likely they were going to go score. So, I mean, I don't know. It's a good win for UW. Just they obviously didn't quite have it this year, but they still won the Pac-12. And, you know, they were the clear favorites heading into the year. And, you know, they did what they were supposed to, win the Pac-12.
Yeah, I think it's very telling that in what is certainly perceived and I guess should be perceived as a down year for Washington, they still, went 10-3 and won the Pac-12. So just kind of shows you where Chris Peterson has that program.
Yep, exactly.
And the fact that the only touchdown in this game came on a ridiculous pick six was very fitting. The Utah receiver, I'm trying to remember, he was trying to catch it and like bounced off his knee or something up in the air. And Byron Murphy caught it and ran it back for a touchdown. That's the only touchdown. So Jason Shelley was totally in over his head against this, what I think is still probably the best secondary in the country. And then on the other side, Jake Browning just continued his mostly underwhelming season.
Yeah, I agree. This game, it really symbolized the Pac-12 as a whole this year. I mean, on paper, it had potential. Even with their lackluster teams, I kind of thought this might be an entertaining game, and it ended up being entertaining in a different way. And we even got a taste of...
You mean
of,
like not entertaining?
Right, exactly. Ryan, you touched on the refs. You got a taste of the, you know, the hashtag Pac-12 refs that last call.
I would
say in hindsight that as the season went on, even it was down, Washington and Washington State were the best teams, so it was probably fitting that one of them won the conference.
Utah was pretty close there. I got it. You know, they.
I agree, but I mean, I'm just saying with the injury.
Especially with the injury, but.
Yeah, if Huntley stayed healthy, they might have won.
Sure. Yeah, I agree.
Big 12 championship, Oklahoma beat Texas 39-27. Trey, what'd you think?
So it was actually a little lower scoring than we anticipated.
Yeah,
but a little bit. It was an exciting game. There were a lot of emotional swings. Texas had an early lead up 14-6, but then OU had three unanswered touchdowns to go up 27-14. Texas battles back to tie it. And then finally, Murray and Calcaterra hooked up for the ceiling touchdown. It was a great catch with two minutes left. And Kyler Murray might have won the Heisman with his performance capping off just an insane year. He threw for 379, three scores. And Ryan, you pointed this out while we were watching the game. To me as well, the key sequence was at the end of the first half when Texas had the ball in Oklahoma territory with under 2 minutes to go, but penalties... And their offense stalled. It made them punt. Oklahoma ended up scoring a touchdown on a 5-play, 80-yard drive in 41 seconds right before the half. So right there, that was a huge momentum swing.
Yeah, it was second and 20. Yeah, you said second and 25?
Well, they had the ball under 2 minutes.
Yeah, they had the ball with about two minutes. OU had zero timeouts, and they should have run it twice, and they would have been essentially halftime, and they would have gone in.
You mean Texas had the ball?
Yeah, Texas had the ball, and then they got a penalty that forced them back to second and 25. And if they would have just run two plays in a row, just to run it, they would have been like 20 seconds left for OU. So
and I don't know.
Texas would have been up by one. They were up by one at that point. So
yeah, but I think when you have the ball in this game and you have a chance to go up against the OU defense and you've got Colin Johnson the way he's playing and you've got Lil Jordan Humphrey, second and 25, that's not like, oh man, we can't get that. We better just run.
Yeah, I don't know. I said it right before as it happened, so I was thinking they should have, but that's just me.
Yeah. Well, I did think after that sequence you guys are talking about that Texas was done, but they weren't. I mean, they battled back into it, and it just ended up again this week. Oklahoma's defense made a big play, of course, with that safety that Ellinger just did not see coming. And then they did get away with a couple pass interference calls late.
Yep.
That ended up sealing the game, but hey, they didn't call him.
No. And in this game, I know Ellinger, he had a really good game as well, but Kyler Murray, he's really just on another level. And he's a difference maker, especially in a game like this. But just overall, I was kind of surprised at how poorly Texas ran the ball against the Sooners. But you do have to give Oklahoma some credit on their defensive side. They stepped up, only allowed 27 points, had the safety, like you mentioned. In the previous four games, they had given up at least 40 in every game. So this was a step in the right direction for sure.
One thing we got to watch out for, of course, Marquise Brown hurt his ankle in this game, and it looks up in the air as to whether he'll be ready for the playoff.
Really? That's a few weeks away. You'd think
yeah,
it's questionable right now. Yeah.
That's too bad.
SEC Championship, Alabama beat Georgia 35-27. And Tua, of course, hurt his ankle early in the game and was limping. But kind of as we talked about earlier, that was not the only reason that Georgia was winning. They were dominating the line of scrimmage. Tua was making some bad decisions regardless of his health.
Yeah.
The Alabama receivers were dropping passes. But, of course, they hung in there. And when they were down 28-21 in the fourth quarter, Jonah Williams stepped on Tua's ankle and he went out. And then in came Jalen Hurts, little roll reversal, same stadium as the national championship last year. And this time Jalen came in to save the day. Of course, he tied it up at 28. And then Georgia had the ball, 3 minutes left. Of course, this is craziest play of the game.
God.
It's tied.
Oh.
And they ran a fake punt.
Oh.
What did you guys think about that call?
Just, what are you doing? Like, 4th and 11? It wasn't like 4th and 2 or 4th and 3.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Just
so
stupid.
Maybe this is contrarian, but I don't mind the call. Like, I don't mind going for a fake punt at midfield, you know, trying to put yourself in position to win the game in regulation. But what I don't like, you know, if you really liked the call you had, if you felt like there was a decent chance of success. But of course, what I don't like is Alabama came out in punt safe, right? So they were,
it appeared they were
ready for it.
Yeah, they were lined up in like their base defense. Like it was just like,
yeah, that's
not going to work.
No. So I don't mind the call, gutsy call, but the execution and the not getting out of it at the last second was not good.
Yeah, fair enough.
So of course, it was not successful and Jalen Hurts drove down the half field and ran in for what turned out to be the game-winning touchdown.
Yeah,
so,
it's too bad Georgia couldn't pull this one out. Especially since, kind of like I mentioned earlier, they were the better team for the majority of this game. They had more yards, they had more first downs, two less turnovers, and won the time of possession battle by more than 10 minutes. So it's surprising that they couldn't pull it out. But yeah, fake punt. Ugh. Man, come on.
Jake Fromm was awesome, by the way.
He was awesome. I mean, I know that fake punt, hindsight's 20/20 on that, but I mean, you could have pinned Alabama deep in their territory. And I know Jalen Hurts had a good previous possession, but, you know, challenge Jalen Hurts to put the ball through the air because we've seen in the past he's not, you know, great at doing that. So I don't know. If it was Tua, maybe it would have been a little different, but yeah, that was rough. But obviously, I think that other big play we didn't mention yet is that missed field goal by Hot Rod. I mean,
yeah.
It was 28-14. He could have made it 31. I mean, maybe that alters the flow of the game there. I mean, you know, I know Georgia or Alabama ends up getting 35, but it turns into a 3-score game and things change. So that was a big miss.
Yeah. These two, it's crazy though. They love to play some classic games. They even had the SEC championship a few years back with Aaron Murray coming down to the final seconds. And then obviously last year's national title in this one, they were all in Atlanta, all great. And the one crazy stat is that Georgia in their last two meetings, national championship in this year, Georgia has led or been tied in 119 minutes of the total 120. And they lost both games.
Oof. Ouch.
I mean, oh, that's brutal.
Wow.
That is brutal.
That's rough.
Okay, let's move on from that and get to the ACC championship game. Now, this is a game we want to talk about. Clemson.
Yeah, this is the one.
42-10. Ryan, how surprised were you with the outcome of this game?
Stunned. Shocked. Really thought Pitt would put up a a good fight here. No, no, nothing surprising about this one. Well, maybe other than the fact that Kenny Pickett only threw for 8 yards on 16 attempts, a 0.5 average.
This is a 4 for 16 and 8 yards.
I mean, it's wow.
I think you meant, and an interception, and he lost two fumbles too.
Just, I could have played better.
I probably not, but wow. Wow.
If I would have just sat down every time I snapped.
That's true. If you had taken a knee, that would have been better.
Yeah, exactly. So I could have done it.
This game, what was the worst game we had this year at quarterback? It was my boy.
Art Sitkowski.
Art Sitkowski. What did he do? Do you remember?
I can't remember the stat line, but didn't he have like four picks?
Okay, well, I'll look it up.
Yeah, go ahead. I'll move on. But, you know, Clemson's obviously got a very, very good defense, but, you know, I mean, this is pretty bad when. This is the best that the ACC Coastal has to offer is Pitt. That was pretty bad. So pretty much the worst Power 5 division. But as far as Clemson moving forward, I've talked about this before. You guys kind of disagree with me. Michael kind of rolls his eyes when I talk about it. Trevor Lawrence. He worries me a little bit.
Okay.
He does. I mean, he was 12 for 24 in this game. And I just don't think he's quite at that level yet where he's good enough to go and beat in Alabama, an elite defense. I mean, I at least you guys can maybe agree with this, that he's nowhere near the level of junior year Deshaun Watson when Clemson won the national title. He's not even close.
No.
And, you know, Watson was amazing. He was incredible then. So I don't see that from Lawrence. I think he's a little too inconsistent, and I don't know.
Yeah, but no one's really expecting them to beat Alabama either. I mean, but he's only a true freshman. I'm not saying he's the chosen one and he's gonna beat them this year. But as far as this game, Pitt they had no chance. Especially when you give up on the first play of the game, you give up a 75-yard rushing touchdown. I mean that's just
It was over after that. I know Pitt kind of came back a little bit, but it was over.
Yeah, complete joke of a title game. Nothing much more to say than Clemson did what they were supposed to. They dominated in every category. And the one storyline about Clemson and the ACC is that even though it's been a little down this year, really down, they've won 4 straight ACC titles. So that's nothing to
sneeze at.
Yeah. I'm going to go with that.
Okay.
And OU's won 4 straight Big 12s, right? So,
okay. Art Sitkowski. This is what we've been waiting for. 2 for 16 for 8 yards.
Wow.
So a little bit worse, I guess.
Yeah.
4 interceptions.
I knew he had 4 interceptions.
So that was worse.
But yeah.
And it was against Maryland, not Clemson. So. but yeah, wow. I mean, I think you guys, we don't need to spend any more time on this game. Big Ten championship. Northwestern hung around until the fourth quarter, but ended up losing 45-24. Trey. What'd you see here?
Yeah, this game went about as expected. Ohio State racked up over 600 yards of offense, 45 points. Haskins threw for 499, 5 touchdowns, and that pretty much sealed a Heisman ceremony invite for him. Now, Northwestern, they kind of made it interesting when they cut the lead to 24-21 early in the third, but you pretty much knew watching this game they didn't really have much of a chance. From that point on, Ohio State outscored them 21-3, so overall, it's a good win for Ohio State, but it wasn't a big statement to sneak them into the playoff, obviously.
No, when Northwestern cut it to 24-21, that was pretty much the nail in the coffin in any chance that Ohio State had to make the playoff, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Because they would have had to completely dominate.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I mean, Ohio State, they pulled away late just because they have too much talent, and Haskins was unreal. He's had an amazing year this year, and that's just the way they've had to win their ball games this year because they can't run the ball. I mean, they ran 46 times in this game for 108 yards. That's horrible.
It's not great.
You would think they would just bust one at least, but their longest run was only 11 yards. It's just crazy bad for a team as talented as they are and as good at running backs as they have, so I mean, they're obviously disappointed they didn't make the playoff, but even maybe some Buckeye fans could maybe admit that they might not deserve it.
I think most of them don't think they did, actually, from what I've seen.
Yeah, exactly.
And this game was sort of Ohio State's season in a nutshell. You mentioned offensively, Ryan, but
in a
defensively
nutshell?
Too. They what's that?
In a bucknut?
Oh yeah, in a Buckeye shell.
Sorry.
No, you've really just messed me up there. What was I saying? What was I talking about?
It's Ohio State season in a nutshell.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because the defense were going up not against, of course, a great offense. They're going up against a bad offense in Northwestern. And according to S&P Plus, at least, Northwestern had their third best game of the season. So, yeah, that defense was why Ohio State didn't make the playoff.
And their running game.
Okay, but mostly the defense. I would put, like, if we're doing a blame pie here, I'm giving, like, 80%, 90% to the defense.
Yeah. All right, I kind of agree with you.
Okay. Time for the rapid recaps. We got to go through the G5 conference championship game. So,
all right.
Ryan, get us started.
I'm going to start with the Mac. I'm surprised you gave me this game instead of Trey. Trey is our Mac guy.
Sorry.
That's okay.
This was a crazy game.
It was a crazy game. Northern Illinois was down 29-10 in the second half, and they came back to beat Buffalo 30-29. Just a crazy heartbreaking loss for Buffalo. And they somehow allowed the much maligned Northern Illinois offense to come to life. And Marcus Childers threw for 300 yards and 4 touchdowns. So career game for him.
Yeah, that's like the stat of the year. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's nuts for him. So it was a kind of a choke job there for Buffalo. Unfortunate after such a good year that they had. They were the class of the MAC throughout the whole season, but Northern Illinois is just historically kind of the class of it, honestly, now. So, but a good win for the Huskies. Right, so we got Conference USA next. Boy, what a difference a week makes, right? Michael, you kind of mentioned this earlier, how it's just like, if they played again next week, they wouldn't.
I'm going to use this argument for years to come.
Exactly.
Remember when UAB lost by 24 and then the next week beat them?
Yep, exactly. They were blown out 27-3 last week. Same place, same team. But UAB was able to bounce back and win 27-25 against the Blue Raiders. It's only their second year back from not having a team. I mean, it's unbelievable what Bill Clark has done, and it's maybe the most amazing thing I've ever seen in college football.
I thought you were going to end it after
never.
What would you say the most amazing thing you've ever seen is?
Have you ever seen a man eat his own head before?
Yeah, I figured somebody was going to say that, yeah.
You ever seen a golfer with an arm going out of his ass? That'd draw a crowd.
That would draw.
All right. Seriously though, I mean, they didn't have players. They were gone for a couple years. How did they do this? It is the most amazing college football thing I've ever seen.
Miracle kick, Nebraska 97, kick 6.
I mean, that
Alabama,
was,
Auburn.
No,
okay,
not compared to this.
Art Sitkowski against Maryland.
That's up there.
Sun Belt Championship. App State won 30-19 against Louisiana, but it was actually an evenly played game. Louisiana had 301 total yards. App State had 300, but the difference was a 97-yard kickoff return by App State and 2 interceptions from Andre Nunez. But I think this is a good showing for Billy Napier. He's now going to be moving up the ranks as far as the top G5 coaches, I expect, within the next couple of years, especially with, you know, we'll get to Scott Satterfield, of course, no longer a G5 coach. We'll talk about that later. AAC Championship, just like in the regular season game, Memphis took a big lead on UCF, and again, they blew it.
Yeah, it's crazy how that repeated itself.
First half, Daryl Henderson had 10 carries for 207 yards and 3 touchdowns, and Memphis was up 38-21. Second half, they got outscored 35-3, and this is the craziest stat. In the second half, Henderson, 6 carries for 3 yards.
Isn't that insane? That's just...
I don't think I've ever seen a bigger disparity. Like,
it's two different
crazy
teams.
That's the most amazing thing I've seen in college football in my lifetime, I think. Daryl Mack had a great game replacing Mackenzie Milton. I did not see that one coming, but UCF, of course, undefeated again. Oh, and then one more game I want to get to before you try. The Drake.
Yeah.
Hung in there with Iowa State. They were 40-point underdogs, and they only lost 27-24.
Yeah, that's crazy. They could have won that thing. That's nuts.
Yeah. Didn't watch it, but
yeah,
I'm sure it was good.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So my first game, and thank goodness for this one in the late window, because the other matchups were bad with the Clemson Pitt and Ohio State Northwestern. It's the Mountain West Championship. Fresno won the rematch against Boise 19-16 in overtime. They had never won on the blue turf before. So if you didn't see this one, most of the game was played in a snow flurry. The biggest play of the game was when Fresno blocked a Boise extra point with 8 minutes left in the game to keep it tied at 13. It's a remarkable turnaround for Fresno. We've touched on it before with Jeff Tedford, but they only had 2 wins 2 years ago before taking over. Last year they finished the year on fire, and then this season they go 11-2 and they're the conference champs. So
they deserve it. I'm glad they beat Boise after last year.
Yeah, good for Fresno. Next game.
By the way, on that missed extra point, it was the classic. I think the announcer, if I'm remembering the right game, the announcer said, "Oh, he's never missed an extra point."
No, yeah, one of those. Oh. The announcer jinx. My next game, Stanford at Cal. So Stanford won the postponed big game, 23-13. Cal's offense couldn't punctuate drives, and they had 3 turnovers, and that ended up dooming them. Stanford has been dominant in this rivalry, having now won 9 straight. It was a fairly disappointing season for Stanford. Well, it was a very disappointing season for Stanford's run game, as Bryce Love and crew, they were held to under 3 yards per carry in this game, and they only averaged 3.7 over the season, compared to last year, where they averaged almost 6 yards per carry.
I don't get it. With mostly the same people. Like,
yeah, they had a lot of injuries on the O-line, even in the second
Bryce.
String.
In Love added some injuries, but I don't know. He got a little injured last year towards the end and still had great games.
Yeah, yeah, it was crazy. All right, let's get to our segments, and we will start with the Heisman race. The finalists were announced, and they are Tua Tagovailoa, Kyler Murray, and Dwayne Haskins, who, amazing year, but 0% chance of winning, right?
0.1. Yeah.
Okay, 0.1. All right, we'll leave that option open.
Yeah.
So who gets your vote for the Heisman, and who do you think will win?
I got to go Kyler Murray. I haven't been 100% on Tua's train like most of America has. I think he's great, and he's only going to get better. But my argument is that the team around him is insanely talented, and against his stiffest test of their schedule, Georgia, he didn't fare too well against them. So and Kyler put up just video game numbers throughout the season, both running and throwing, over 70% completions, 40 touchdown passes, 11 on the ground. He had the highest QBR in the country. I mean, you could go on and on. So that's why I would have to say Kyler Murray.
Yeah, I'm pretty much like you, Trey. I was, even before this weekend, waffling on whether I wanted to go with Tua or Kyler. I don't have a vote, just in case anyone's wondering.
Oh.
But if I did. So I would go with Kyler as well after this weekend. He's the stats differential is too big, especially with the running game. 892 yards on the ground compared to 190 for Tua. So, yeah, the stats won out for Tua or for Kyler.
Yeah. Did you guys hear that like 10% of the voters had already casted their votes before conference title games happen?
Man, this happens every year.
Right?
Yeah, it's just absurd. Their credentials should be revoked.
It's crazy. Anyways, I heard that and I got angry again. So I was like, oh. A lot of things grind my gears.
Yeah. Yeah,
as we know. But I, you know, before conference championship week, because this is why I got so angry, before conference championship week, I would have voted for Tua and I would have had no problem doing that. But after it, you know, the way Tua struggled against Georgia, threw a couple picks, made a couple of other really boneheaded decisions, and then to see Jalen Hurts come in and star and carry Bama to the win, and then seeing Kyler Murray continue what he's done, I agree with you guys. Kyler Murray, the statistics are just, it's too great of a difference now. And with that sour taste in your mouth from Tua's performance, I think Kyler's going to win it. And I think he deserves it.
Two years in a row, an Oklahoma quarterback.
Yeah, but he had like an even better year than Baker.
No, I'm not. He did. I'm not disagreeing.
He definitely had a better year.
Yeah.
Trey, though, I think you and I didn't say who we think would win. I also think Kyler's going to win. What are the odds, Trey? You texted us earlier today.
Oh, well, yeah. I saw, according to Bet Online, it was already up to Kyler favored for the first time all year, up to minus 210.
Okay.
But either way, he was favored.
Yeah, I think I saw lower than that
at some
other website.
I saw minus 162, but...
Either way, he's basically not an overwhelming favorite, but a favorite.
No.
So I guess I'll predict he wins.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
Well, but when was the last time... I say this like I haven't already looked it up. Guys, when was the last time that there was any suspense before the announcement of a winner?
Was it Mark Ingram?
So that, yes, you can go back to 2009. Mark Ingram was, but he was minus 350.
Oh, wow.
I guess the week of, which there's certainly still suspense there, but that's a lot bigger favorite than Kyler Murray is, at least as we're recording this. So that was the year Toby Gerhart came in second, Colt McCoy third, and Ndamukong Suh fourth. And they all had reasonably low odds, chances to win. But so you might have to go all the way back. I couldn't find the odds for everyone, but Eric Crouch, when it was him, Rex Grossman, and Ken Dorsey, ew, and Joey Harrington.
Wow.
That was definitely a close one.
Could go back to 95 as well.
Yeah.
I don't remember how close that was, Eddie George against Tommy Frazier, but...
I don't either, but, you know, I was eight, so I didn't really... Didn't care too much. I do now.
Okay, well, that's that. Any other names you want to bring up for the Heisman? Anyone else that... should get some honorable mentions by us.
If Minshew won the Apple Cup, he would be in New York, don't you think?
I think so. Yeah.
Well,
hey, and next year it's really trending towards Art Sitkowski.
Ooh, yes, I agree.
Some favorites next year?
Wait for our preseason episodes.
Wait for our previews and stuff.
Well, Tua. I think Tua's going to have a good chance.
Tua.
If he doesn't win this year, he'll still have a good chance next year.
Yeah.
Tua, Trevor Lawrence. Yeah.
Who's your sleeper for next year? Oh, well, you already said Art Sitkowski.
Adrian Martinez.
I knew it. I couldn't even... You didn't even have to ask the question. He wanted to list him as a favorite.
He's going to be up. At
oh, God.
He's going to have...
Oh, we're getting the hype train started early.
He's going to have some numbers, man. He's going to put up some numbers.
Oh, gosh.
By the way, one more thing before we stop talking about the Heisman. I think the one thing people are going to argue for Tua is that he played in the SEC against much better defenses.
Right.
But I think if you look at Alabama's schedule compared to Oklahoma, I think that's overstated because I looked up the defensive rankings per FPI of the two teams' schedules. Alabama's opponents averaged the 55th ranked defenses, whereas Oklahoma was 61st. So wasn't all that different, actually.
Not a huge gap.
Yeah, the whole Big 12 narrative compared to who they played in the SEC isn't that dramatic, like you said.
Right, because Alabama didn't play Georgia in the regular... Well, they played him in the championship game, but it didn't go so well.
They didn't play Florida.
Kentucky.
Yeah, so. Okay, coaching carousel time. We're going to take a long ride on the coaching carousel. We might get a little queasy, but... Hopefully, we can handle
it. Especially me. I get motion sickness, yeah.
That's right, you do.
Yeah.
Fun fact about Ryan.
Yeah.
Power 5 jobs. Let's start with those. So, first, Paul Johnson is retiring, which came out of nowhere for me. I did not see that coming.
Yeah, I didn't see him retiring, but, you know, seems like it was about the right time for Paul Johnson to move on, at least from Georgia Tech.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it kind of capped out there. He wasn't going to be taking them to the next level at this point after 11 years.
Yeah, if I was a fan, I think I'm happy. He did a good job, but I'm happy that he's moving on so that they can move on.
Yeah, I'm sure they're tired of 6-6, 7-5 type years. But
yeah.
Potential coaching replacements there. Seems like Clemson offensive coordinator Tony Elliott is getting a lot of run right now, as is Temple head coach Jeff Collins. Those two guys appear to be maybe the front runners. I know they interviewed Ken Wisenhunt, but
oh my God. If I was a fan, I would jump off.
Yeah. I don't think they will. I think
what would you jump off of?
That's good. I don't know. A couch, but no, I think Georgia Tech fans have to be happy about this. I mean, really Georgia Tech, it should be a really good job. They're in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Georgia, it's a talent-rich state, talent-rich area.
Good school.
Now that Georgia is doing so well, there's no reason Georgia Tech can't at least compete, especially in the ACC. So, you know, if they get, like you said, maybe, I don't want Wisenhunt if I was a fan, but the two other guys you mentioned, the Clemson OC and the Temple coach, I'd be a little more in favor of.
I want Jeff Collins if I'm them.
I guess even that name doesn't blow me away. I mean, he's obviously had a very good year this year, but I would still like to see more from someone from Jeff Collins.
You'd always love to see more.
Right. But there are other guys that have done more, I think, at the G5 level. That,
like, who? Who do you want?
Neil Brown. Okay. He's done more at Troy. Seth Luttrell at North Texas.
Yeah, well, Jeff Collins
Right? How you feel about that right in your eyeball?
Jeff Collins has all the ties to the state, though. That's kind of the deal for him.
I think that's maybe overrated, though.
Is it?
Prove me wrong. Prove me. Name one example of how it's not overrated. I just did a double negative there. I'm very confused about what I just asked you.
Yeah, I don't. Somebody that went to their place and it worked out. Is that what you're?
No, Forget I said anything. Let's get to Bill Snyder. Okay, are we done with Georgia Tech?
Yeah, we're well done.
Just how Ryan orders his steaks.
No, Ryan was a rambling wreck there.
Ooh, nice. Ryan, what? You don't think you order your steaks well done?
I don't have to think about it. I know I don't.
Okay. What do you order?
I ordered a medium.
Okay. All right.
Maybe when I was like 8 or 9, I would say. Okay.
Oh, yeah. How do you order your burgers?
Medium well.
Oh, medium well. Wow. You've changed. I don't even know you anymore.
We've lost the podcast. Yeah.
Bill Snyder is retiring. What do you think about this news? And who do you guys think they might hire?
It was time, but his run was really like nothing else in college football. He was a wizard. He led them to national relevance, and then he did so again after he retired and came back last time.
Yeah,
but I think as far as candidates, Seth Luttrell, who Michael you mentioned, he has to be the big get here in my opinion. He played in the Big 12, so he's familiar with that. He developed North Texas into a contender. I think he'd be a home run hire for them. I've also seen Brett Bielema rumored where I think he'd fit, but I'd be a little underwhelmed.
I would be very underwhelmed by that. That would be awful. Jim Leavitt, he's a guy that's seems like for years has always been rumored to take over. That'd be okay, but I agree. Seth Luttrell, you got to get him.
Yep. Bill Snyder, though, just one of the greatest coaches of all time. Hall of Famer, just unreal. Maybe the one of the greatest coaching jobs ever. They were pathetic before he got there, but I've seen some other names thrown out there. You always see Brent Venables is always a name. He's a Kansas State guy, mm-hmm. coach there, so potentially. Dana Dimmel, he's a Kansas State guy. He's at UTEP. I know they.
No
chance.
Just saying, 0%. I've heard the names thrown out there.
I'm just giving my reaction to the name.
Blake Anderson, Arkansas State.
Closer.
Yeah.
And finally, Craig Bull.
Nah.
Wyoming. Nah.
All right. We should just, every job we talk about now, we'll just list off the candidates and just give sort of a grunt about what you think about it.
Seth Luttrell, I agree with you guys. That's the one it needs to be if you're K-State.
Next one.
Or really anybody.
Texas Tech hired Utah State head coach Matt Wells. And sticking with the theme, I'll go,
No, I'm...
Yeah, we talked about Matt Wells last week, and I would have him a notch below some of the other G5 coaches we've mentioned because he did inherit a very successful program. I know it's hard to win there, but up until this year, he was arguably on the hot seat. And of course, we have to factor in this year. He did an amazing job, so I give him credit for that. But I don't know. If the rumor is true that they could have hired Dana Holgorsen, then I would have preferred that.
Okay, maybe Dana Holgorsen, but I don't know. I think it's a solid hire for Texas Tech. I'm not going to say it was a home run hire, but he was the 44-34 at Utah State, but you got to take that into consideration because one of those years, his star quarterback was hurt for pretty much the entire season.
Chucky.
Yep, exactly. And then another year, I think it was 2016, maybe it was, they were 0-7 in one-score games. And they went like 6-7 that year. So
You dug a little deeper. All right. I'm feeling a little better about it.
Yeah. So that 44-34, maybe it could turn into like a fifth, you know, they could win 5-8 more games. And I don't know. I think he did better than it appeared, you know, with what he was dealt with. So
fair.
The biggest thing for me is, you know, well, like you said, Michael, he inherited a program from Gary Anderson, which ironically he might give the reins back to him, but we'll get that later. But it's definitely a culture shift for Texas Tech, as they've solely relied on the air raid over the years. So I'm curious to see how much that'll change in Lubbock.
One more thing I'll say is for him is he's always had a good defense at Utah State too, which we all know Texas Tech desperately needs. They've had a top 50 S&P plus defense in Utah State every single one of the years he was there, even when they had a bad year. So
did you spend like an hour just reading about Utah State, Ryan? You came to play on this one.
Apparently, I was really one article.
Too much.
One article. You read one article?
I read an article. That's about as much preparation as I'll do.
Georgia defensive coordinator Mel Tucker is, I think it's more than a rumor at this point, he's going to be the next head coach at Colorado.
Yeah.
Do you like this move, Ryan? Give me a grunt. Okay.
I'm not sure. Yeah. Not sure how to grunt in a positive manner.
Well,
yeah, I think it's a good hire for the Buffs. Mel Tucker, he's proven to be a great defensive coach at Georgia, but maybe more importantly, he's proven to be a really good recruiter.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to get the talent level up in Boulder very quickly. And they were kind of falling behind as far as recruiting just because of the appearance of the school. Like, it's kind of had dropped down as far as status. So I think this is a great get. He'll get a lot of talent there. But I'm also interested to see who he gets on his staff, because that's a big factor. But I do like it. I'm going to give it like an A- type of hire. I think it's pretty good.
I would agree with that. Yeah. I the recruiting factor is what I like about it. And I think he's going to place importance on that in putting together his staff. And he's been around, like he's been in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But he's not an NFL guy anymore, because he does have experience under Nick Saban now and under Kirby Smart. So hopefully he's learned the blueprint to how to build a program.
And he's got obviously a great defensive resume, so I think they wanted to make a push that way. And he's got some passion, some fire, and he's going to be an upgrade over McIntyre. And the Pac-12, with it being pretty wide open, there's no reason he couldn't make Colorado a little more relevant than they've been.
Yeah. Okay, Jeff Brohm is staying put at Purdue. How much did this surprise you guys? More or less than Clemson beating Pitt?
That's a tough one. No, I honestly, I'm very surprised. When home and your alma mater calls, it's generally a slam dunk. But credit to Brohm for staying loyal and wanting to continue to build what he calls the impossible at Purdue. It's a bad look for Louisville, though. You know, the athletic department seems to be in complete disarray. The football team is obviously a mess. It's pretty hard for Louisville fans to be optimistic when, you know, one of their prized alums turns them down to stay at Purdue.
Yeah, that's the key thing there, Trey, is the athletic department's kind of a little bit in shambles in Louisville, and I think that's a big factor. And it's also why I'm not stunned that Brohm decided to stay at Purdue. He's got a good thing going there. You know, especially in the Big Ten West, where there's, you know, it's not the East where you're playing the big dogs every in your division. So he knows he's got a good thing going there. He's got Elijah Sindelar coming back. He's going to be competing in the Big Ten West every year. So I don't know. I don't think he's going to be there for the long haul, but I think it's going to take more than a program like Louisville, even though that is his alma mater, to sway him away.
Okay, so with no Jeff Brohm, it appears that Louisville is turning to Scott Satterfield from App State. Not official yet, but looks to be headed that way. So what do you guys think about this move?
I really like this hire. He's done a remarkable job there at Appalachian State. You know, in every single year he's been there, they finished in the top three in scoring offense and scoring defense in the conference. So, or at least the past four seasons he has. So he's doing great on both sides of the ball. And I know he hasn't coached in Power Five before, but I mean, when he's gone up against Power Five teams at App State, he's doing great. He did well. But he almost beat Penn State, then Wake Forest he almost beat, and then Tennessee a couple years ago. So I don't know. I mean, I know they didn't get Brohm, but this was about the next best thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a home run hire. He took over 1 year before they got into FBS. Didn't have a great first year, but then when they got into FBS, he went 6-2 in the Sun Belt his first year, and then he's gone 7-1 every year since then. So that's an unbelievable transition into FBS. So yeah, I think he's a great coach.
Almost as good as UAB.
Well, yes, true. Okay, next we've got Maryland. They, of course, still looking for a coach. Alabama offensive coordinator Mike Locksley is supposedly the favorite to get the job, but they're also considering Pep Hamilton from Michigan, and then, of course, Matt Canada. And I really don't
None
like
of
any
guys.
Of those names.
Yeah, I mean,
especially Pep Hamilton.
Yeah, really?
Who looks at Michigan's offense the last few years and thinks, man,
we need
give
that,
me
guy.
That guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Nah.
So,
yeah.
And then Mike Locksley, he already had a head coaching job at New Mexico. Obviously, that's a tough place to win, but it went horribly, very bad.
It was a train wreck.
Yes.
And like 2-26 or something. It was horrible.
Really bad. And he had an altercation with an assistant there. So I don't know. I know Alabama's offense has been really good this year, but I wouldn't be thrilled to hire him.
No, and it's not because of Locksley. And, you know, yeah. Those off the field issues right there, like, no bueno. Of those three, though, I would stick with Matt Canada. I mean, what we saw, what he did with their offense and the players seemed to rally around him after the whole Durkin fiasco, I would have to give him the upper hand. I mean, at least when you match him up against those two candidates you mentioned.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a no-win situation for those three. Mike Locksley, Mike, you already mentioned it, was terrible at New Mexico, had the physical altercation with an assistant, and he had an age and sex discrimination complaint against him. I'm not sure why you'd want to bring that to Maryland after what's kind of just happened there. Matt Canada was a part of the staff that was part of treating players unfairly.
Yeah, I mean, he just got there, but...
But he was there. I'd kind of want to move on from that. I'd want to move on from that. We need to wipe this slate clean and start fresh, a new program, new coach, new everything. And I don't, you know, he doesn't do that for you. Pep Hamilton. Yeah. We kind of already said that it's not great, but I would probably go with him of the three.
Oof.
I know. You're not giving me any, you know, come on, Maryland, give me something else.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Last Power Five team we got to talk about is actually a voicemail. I'll play that right now.
Hey guys, this is Todd calling from New Jersey. Big fan. Found you guys over the summer. Listen every week. I gotta say, after this week's episode, when you guys mentioned the stuff going on at USC with Clay Helton being retained and the letter from Lynn Swann, as a Rutgers fan, which I know you guys dump on them, which they totally deserve it after the history they've had, but they're going through the same exact thing. Nobody wants Chris Ash here anymore. Like, nobody. There was money brought up by donors to handle his buyout, but the school didn't want to deal with trying to find a new coach on a small budget, which is the problem right now until we get the full share of the Big Ten money. We got a letter, all fans got a letter from Pat Hobbs, the AD, over the weekend, basically saying the exact same stuff that Lynn Swann said in their letter. And then at the end, the kicker was basically asking for more money as donations. Season ticket sales have plummeted, and they will continue to plummet because most fans that you see and talk to are dropping their season tickets. They don't want to go anymore. Visiting fans seem to pack the stadium more than home fans. Chris Ash has literally destroyed any kind of momentum that this program had. While still small, you know, over the past 10 years, he's kind of killed it. This season, we thought there would be more improvement because last year there was more improvement than the year before, and there was nothing. Maybe the last few games, you know, the defense started to play a little better, but the offense was garbage because he kept Arthur Sikowski in there way more than he should have.
How dare you?
My question for you guys, I guess, is are Clay Helton and Chris Ash definitely lame ducks next year? Does any bit of improvement over this year kind of help their cause and to continue into the next year, or does basically – you know, they're just buying out a year because they don't want to pay the buyouts. Keep up the good work. Love listening to you guys. Bye.
Well, it was an interesting listen to that there.
It was a great voicemail.
Yeah, it was great. To answer that question, that last question there, I feel that Chris Ash is more of a lame duck than Clay Helton.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like Clay Helton at least has the potential to break through and have a good year.
Yeah, Clay Helton's not a lame duck. Certainly you could make more of an argument that Clay Helton is the right guy than Chris Ash.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Clay Helton's made a couple of Pac-12 title games, Rose Bowl, or not Rose Bowl, but Fiesta Bowl.
He went to the Rose Bowl.
Oh, yeah, Rose Bowl first.
He went to the Rose Bowl, yeah, and he only made one Pac-12 title game.
And then the Cotton Bowl.
Oh, Cotton, yeah. So, exactly. But Chris Ash, I mean, this was the year where, I mean, they went 4-8 the year previous. It was better than the year before, so they needed to make another step this year, but boy, they just completely took a step in the wrong direction. And I think we'd maybe disagree about Art Sitkowski, though. I think he's going to lead them to the promised land. He's a stud, no?
Yeah, I
feel bad for him.
I can't offer much hope. I'd love to, maybe the hope is that, just another year in the system, they can show some improvement.
I'm reaching. He is a lame duck. Has to be. It sounds like just whenever they're willing to
buy him out,
be able to pony up the money to replace him, that's when he's gone.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's after next year.
Yeah.
And the Rutgers program, of course, we laugh at how bad they've been recently, but it wasn't that long. In 2014, they were 8-5. Like, this is not an unsalvageable.
Yeah.
That's a hard word. I should stop where just not even
unsalvageable.
Try.
Unsalvageable.
There you go. You got it.
Yep. Nailed it.
And I lost my train of thought.
He brought up the Lynn Swann letter, and I just want to finish with that. I've sat on this for a week, or I mentioned it to you guys. Swan, his statement included, this is the quote, deficiencies in areas that include culture, discipline, schemes, personnel, and staff.
What else is there?
That's the end of his quote. Those are literally all related to the head coaching duties. It's like that Office Space quote. What is it you actually do here? It's just like stunning that he put that in the letter, but anyways.
He could say the same thing about Chris Ash, huh?
Right.
Yeah, 0-9 in Big Ten play.
And they lost to Kansas, right?
They got killed by Kansas.
They got blown out.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's a fireable offense in itself.
That really was.
I don't know. Yeah, I feel bad. I feel bad
they,
to be.
They just can't pay him. They don't want to buy out. That's obviously what it is.
Right.
It's
Okay. G5 moves. Let's go a little bit quicker with these. We'll go around in a circle until we get through all of them. Get us started, Ryan.
Sure. We got East Carolina to start.
Taking too long, Ryan. You got to be quicker.
they found their coach, Mike Houston. He was James Madison's head coach, and he led them to a national title a couple years ago. Had three really good years, 37-6 there during his time. And so I think this is a good hire. He's got a lot of ties to the area. So it seems like a good hire for East Carolina. We're moving on to Utah State.
Who did they fire?
You know, the guy that was there before.
Scotty Montgomery.
Yes.
No, Ryan, we're going in a circle, okay? It's my turn.
Oh.
Yeah, it's Michael's turn.
Texas State. They fired Everett Withers, who was 2-10, 2-10, 3-9. What's that, Ryan?
Did you know who Texas State's coach? Could you have named him before, a week ago?
Of course I could. I could name all 130 coaches, Ryan.
Sure you can.
Come on. They hired him from James Madison. I think that's right.
I don't know.
Wasn't he Ohio State's?
He was Ohio State's. Yeah, he was a co-defensive coordinator there.
Yeah.
But then he went down to James Madison, was their head coach for a couple years, then Texas State. But anyway, time to go for him. And Texas State hired 33-year-old Jake Spavital.
Yeah,
He's West Virginia's offensive coordinator and quarterback coach for the past couple of years. And before that, he was at Cal as an offensive coordinator. So, I mean, that sounds like a solid hire to me. He's done a good job.
I'm on board.
Yeah, why not?
I've got Charlotte. They fired Brad Lambert, and it's been bizarre since then. Last week, all indications were that they were going to hire Mike Houston from James Madison. But then in the final kind of last minutes, Charlotte's AD pulled the offer because Houston wanted to look at all of his opportunities. And so right now there's actually like no known candidates, and it's not really the most appealing job, especially after what the AD just did. So little odd.
Well, Mike Houston did end up at a better job at East Carolina. So True. Don't blame them.
Well, if you listen to Podcast Ain't Played Nobody, they like the Charlotte job, so don't tell that to them.
Okay.
You're probably not going to talk to them, so yeah. It's okay. Ryan, your turn.
Oh, all right. Now Utah State. There was reports a few days ago that Gary Anderson was going to take the job back, but those apparently are just rumors, and he's not going to be doing it, but he does remain a candidate, so it could happen. But some other names, you got Jay Hill. He's Weber States. I think it's Weber.
It's Weber.
I don't know. Weber? Okay, Weber State. He's Weber State's coach, and he's turned them into a powerhouse at that level. And then you also got Stanford's defensive coordinator, Lance Anderson. His name's being thrown around. And their current interim coach, Frank Male. But honestly, it's pretty wide open right now. I think they hired a firm, so they're just getting all their candidates together. So we don't know.
Okay, Central Michigan fired John Bonamago, who, when they hired him, was a longtime NFL special teams coordinator who really had no recent college experience. So who would have thunk that didn't turn out well? He was actually okay up until this year, but 1-11, it was definitely time to go. And they have hired Jim McElwain. You guys might have heard of him.
Wow.
He's humping a shark.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it. I mean, I don't know. You could convince me either way, I think. He did a great job at Colorado State. Probably has some good contacts as far as hiring assistants. But I could also see being like, meh, Jim McElwain.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with that one.
All right, I'm going to go staying in the MAC. I'm going to go with Bowling Green. The Falcons fired Mike Jinks earlier, and they actually had Carl Pelini be the temporary coach for some time.
Carl!
Lets you know how bad things got there.
They have since hired Boston College offensive coordinator Scott Loeffler. Now, he's an Ohio native, so he knows the general area, as we've talked about. And he does have some experience at big programs like Florida, Michigan, Auburn, and Virginia Tech. When I first kind of saw Boston College offensive coordinator, I was a little perplexed. But when you look at his resume, I think it fits.
All right, right on. Yeah, I'm going to stay in the MAC here again. We got Akron. They got rid of Terry Bowden. A little surprised by that. I know they went 4-8 this year, but you know, they went to 2 bowl games out of the previous 3 years, and that's a program that had been pathetic for quite a long time. And plus, they have no money. That school was hemorrhaging, and so this is only going
to
make it harder.
Where's LeBron? LeBron needs to donate.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I mean, that's just going to make it harder on them in their budget. So I don't think they're going to have a ton of money to spend on the replacement. But the replacements, yeah, it's wide open. Few names to consider: Luke Getsy. He's an offensive coordinator and wide receiver coach for Mississippi State right now. He was the quarterback for Akron, I think, in the 90s. Or no, maybe, shoot. I think it was the
90s. It's okay. It's not that relevant.
He was a quarterback anyways when they won their only conference title, so that kind of makes sense. Ryan Held, he's Nebraska's running backs coach. He was a finalist for the Kent State job last year, so he's a name. Finally, you got Michael Johnson. He's a wide receiver coach for Oregon. He's a former Akron quarterback. Oh, and Brian Polian. He's Notre Dame special teams coach.
Okay.
Bill Polian's kid.
All right. UMass, Mark Whipple stepped down as their head coach. RIP Whipple ball. And it was definitely time for him to go. He never went better than 4-8. And they have hired 34-year-old Florida State offensive coordinator Walt Bell. And you hear Florida State offensive coordinator, maybe doesn't sound great, but I think it's a good hire. You know, this year he didn't call the plays until late in the year, and maybe didn't inherit the best offense, especially that O-line. And he did a good job with Maryland's offense the previous couple of years when he had healthy quarterbacks. Did a great job at Arkansas State, and he's known as a really good recruiter. So I actually really like this hire.
All right, Mike. Good.
Oh, one more that was late breaking news. Liberty head coach Turner Gill is retiring because of his wife's health problems. So
yeah, that's
not a happy story, but
no. Yeah, that's too bad.
Okay, now let's look ahead quickly to the New Year's Six. We'll of course talk about the playoff games a lot, I'm sure, in the coming weeks. So let's save that. But which of the other 4 New Year's Six games are you most looking forward to? So I'll list them. We got the Peach Bowl, Florida against Michigan, Fiesta Bowl, LSU, UCF, the Rose Bowl, Ohio State, Washington, and the Sugar Bowl, Georgia, Texas.
Well, I got to be a little honest. We kind of talked about this earlier, but none of these are really jumping off of the page and really exciting me as much as it probably should. But I'm going to go with the Sugar, Texas and Georgia, two big name schools. This is a great opportunity for Texas to prove that they're back and back to being able to compete with the elite teams. And to me, this game just means more to Texas than it does Georgia. We already know Georgia's back. They're elite. They're at the top. But a win like this for Texas could really help Tom Herman take that next step to get to where they need to be.
Yep. I was kind of between the Peach and the Rose Bowl, actually. I'm going to go Rose Bowl. These two, you know, Washington, Ohio State, they were conference favorites for most of the year, and we all know that Washington has been fairly lethargic on offense, but now they get to face a weak Ohio State defense for the most part. So I'm interested to see if Gaskins and Browning can move it and hopefully, potentially match scores with Ohio State. Washington, they've had a solid defense, so I want to see how they stack up against the Big Ten's best. If Ohio State plays like they did against Michigan, then Washington might not have a chance. I'm interested in the Rose.
Okay, I'm going to go with the Fiesta Bowl, LSU-UCF. Now, I would have rather had UCF go up against a Georgia, because then, of course, they would have gotten a lot more credit than they would get if they beat a good but not great LSU team. But still, if they go undefeated two straight seasons, and especially here with their backup freshman quarterback, if they beat LSU, then that's one step closer to the G5 being treated fairly. It's just one step closer to, hey, we got to give these guys a shot.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, this is a long podcast, guys. This is a long one. I'm not going to check how long it's been.
We've had some interesting conversations. It's kind of dragged on.
It's been a good one. I like it, but time to end it. Let's get to the questionable finish. By the way, guys, I just remembered, this is our 69th episode.
So wow. Quite the milestone.
So what is your favorite sex position? Oh, no, wait, that's not the question.
Jesus.
There are 39 bowl games this year, but there's always room for one more. What is your idea for the 40th bowl game?
I'm thinking we can have the Arby's We Have the Meats Bowl.
Ooh, I like it. I like that.
Yeah, it'll be in Atlanta where Arby's headquarters are.
Sweet.
They are?
Yeah. I had to look it up.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Feels like an Arby's night.
It does. I haven't had that for a long time.
I would have to say I want a matchup of the worst teams. Like, what about, like, we look at some rating system. Like, this year, it looks like it would be UConn versus UTEP or something. Like, who is the worst?
So, Trey, that's my idea. We call it the Toilet Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So, apparently, this wasn't very creative. And you play it in the worst state in the country, which is
Alabama.
No, what? Oh, man. Wow. We've got a lot of Alabama fans listening to this, right?
As a joke.
It's not the worst.
JK, guys.
Okay, sorry. North Dakota. That's the worst.
Oh. Well, we can safely say North Dakota, can't we?
Yep. If anyone's listening from North Dakota, I'm deeply sorry. Jalen Hurts opened up about crying in his parents' arms after the title game benching. When was the last time you cried?
This is easy. It was last week when I was eliminated from Pick'em.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, all right. Trey not wanting to get vulnerable with us. I'm going real here. Toy Story 3.
Ooh.
When they're at the dump, you know, and they're all holding each other's hands going into they think they're going to die. That one, that got me.
Wow. I don't think I saw that.
Yeah, there's some movies that could definitely get me. I don't remember the last time I watched one, but I'll just always remember Shiloh.
Oh, that
God.
Man.
Or Air Bud.
Air Bud when he tries to get rid of the dog. He throws the tennis ball or something. Oof.
Yeah, like floating away on the boat.
God. That was sad.
Wow. No, I'm okay. For me, I'm going to go real too. Mine was probably about a year and a half ago. My wife and I were going through that difficult visa process and just to try to get her here to the United States. And I went to visit her in Colombia for the summer. And when I left Colombia to come back to LA, at that time I had to leave her because she wasn't allowed to come back. So, having to say goodbye to her when I was leaving Colombia at the airport, that was tough.
Man card.
Wait.
Sorry.
I'm not afraid to admit it. That was
no, that,
was
that got
moment.
Really real. That was.
Hey, dude, I mean, it's the last time I cried, I think.
That was good. No, it's good. I mean, yeah, that's a good answer. Last question. What non-New Year's Six Bowl are you most looking forward to? So I'll start. I'm going with the Alamo Bowl. We got Iowa State against Washington State. And, you know, it's two teams that are both, of course, usually not this good. It's a great coaching matchup, Mike Leach and Matt Campbell. Great quarterback matchup, Brock Purdy, Gardner Minshew. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's a good one, Mike. I thought about that. I'm going to go with the Music City Bowl between Purdue and Auburn. I think we're going to see a pretty high-scoring, entertaining, close game. And Gus Malzahn, he could really use a win here because he's 1-4 in bowl games at Auburn. So not doing too well there. I just think it's going to be an exciting game. You guys remember Purdue's bowl game last year, right?
Yes, they played against, don't tell me, Purdue, NC State?
Crazy game. Nope.
Oh, what? Who was it? Wake Forest.
Nope. That was Texas A&M.
Oh, my goodness. What is wrong with me?
They played Arizona.
They played Arizona.
Khalil Tate.
Okay.
Oh,
Khalil
yeah.
Khalil Tate had a great passing day, I remember.
Yeah, exactly.
In the Foster Farms Bowl.
Now you remember.
Yeah. Whoops.
So I totally agree. Yeah. When I was looking at the slate, the two games that I actually looked at were the Music City Bowl and the Alamo Bowl. I'd probably give a nod. It's crazy. We all agreed. I'd probably give a nod to the Alamo Bowl just because I really like both those teams, both those coaches and the quarterbacks. So I would say the Alamo Bowl.
All right. Thanks everybody for listening to this episode. Thanks for listening all season. And we appreciate all of you who have been engaging with us on social media, everyone who calls into the podcast. We really appreciate that. That's one of the big reasons we do that is we want to start a conversation with random people online. And that sounded creepy the way I worded that.
But. It sounded very creepy.
ASL.
Yeah, ASL.
Oh, well, you know what I mean. Sure. We will be here throughout all of bowl season to preview all the bowl games. And next week, our plan right now is to do the second annual Golden Bro Awards. Does that sound good, guys?
Sounds like a lot of fun, Mike.
All right. So, great 69 first episodes. Here's to 69 more.
There you go. Nice.
You've been listening to the College Football Bros. If you have any questions for the next podcast, email them to collegefootballbros@gmail.com. To keep up with the brothers on social media, like them on Facebook at College Football Bros. Follow them on Instagram at College Football Bros. And for their commentary on Saturdays, follow them on Twitter at CFB Bros. Thanks for listening.